Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hey, welcome to the Crack House Chronicles. I am Donnie, your host, and with me is a man that wants everyone to know that AC/DC is one of his favorite bands, and also his fifth grade report card. It's Dale.
You'd earn that. Yeah. It's kind of like a TNT, ain't it?
That's it.
Oh, man, what's going on, brother?
I'm ready to record, man. It's been a while.
It's been a while, man. It has. It's been a couple... pretty wild couple of weeks for me, and I just want to say I saved our shout outs this week for everybody who was who chimed in and emailed and texted and commented and just made me feel better since with my dad's passing and all, and getting over that and stuff. And I really appreciate all you guys and to you, Donnie, for everything you've done for us and stuff. Anyway, I'm ready to get going.
That's how we roll, bud.
So, yeah, thanks to all you guys. Appreciate it.
We love our listeners, man.
I'm telling you.
We do. You got anything else you want to talk about before we get started?
I did have a birthday.
You did have a birthday?
I did. I was got another year older a couple weeks ago. Had some family come into town, and that was really cool. So that was a big change from what we had going on. So a little good stuff going on there, and it was well needed. I missed this chair, and I'm ready to get rolling now. I missed all our fans, and I'm sure they ain't missed us a bit. Yep.
I posted on Facebook a little bit ago that we're back in the studio, and we are recording. So we'll have an episode. This episode will drop Monday.
Sweet. So we're like back. Let's see. Back in the crack.
House.
Yeah. That was my AC/DC reference there. Sorry. Yeah.
All right, dude, we are going to get started on this crazy episode, man.
Okay, let's do it, dude. I'm ready. I'm so ready.
And we're talking about Ray Rivera.
Ray.
And not the boxer.
No.
This is the death of Ray Rivera.
Ray, R-E-Y, like in Mysterio.
Yeah. Yeah. Ray Omar Rivera, Dale, he was born on June the 10th, 1973.
Wow, that was my mom's birthday.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. To Angel and Maria Rivera. Now, his dad, Angel, was in the military.
Okay.
And their family moved around quite a bit. And this helped them to stay pretty close family. They were pretty tight.
Right. Yeah, they always said they had a chance to make some temporary friends before they moved away.
So yeah.
The only thing that was really always there was the family.
But their family was really, really tight.
Yep.
And that's going to come into play in this case that we're talking about.
Right.
Now, Ray was engaged to his longtime girlfriend, Allison, and they went to Puerto Rico to get married. This is where Ray and his family grew up. And
had a big wedding right there on the beach.
Right there on the beach. And Ray's buddy from high school, his name was Porter Stansberry.
Right.
He flew in to Puerto Rico on his private helicopter.
Yeah, no doubt.
Ooh. Oh, yeah.
Fancy.
He had an investment business in Baltimore. It was like a...
well, it was Stansberry and Associates Investment Research, so whatever that company does.
Or they put out a news publication on businesses that were in trouble, that were trying to rebound. I think that's what they were trying to accomplish.
It's like a tip line, kind of.
Kind of, I think so. But Porter Stansberry is going to come into play just a little bit later.
Okay.
But Ray and Allison, they were living in California. And Ray was an aspiring screenplay writer. He wanted to do this pretty bad. He was pretty good at it.
Mm-hmm. It was his passion, yeah.
But it wasn't bringing in the money like he wanted to.
No, it's probably like anything in Hollywood. You're either dead broke or rich.
Yeah.
So, you know, he had never got that break, even though he had written a lot of stuff.
Yeah, it just wasn't panning out for him.
Yeah, so I think that's when his buddy Porter reached out and said, you know, won't you come work for me?
Yep.
Yeah.
So Ray moved to Baltimore, and I don't think Allison went right away, did she?
Not right at first, no.
I think he was there.
I don't know how long. It's really, well, what's the word here? It's really cloudy or murky or whatever. It's to say at what point she joined him. It wasn't a long time, I don't think.
No, but he did go there and start up working for Porter,
mm-hmm.
and he was writing articles for Dansbury and Associates Investments.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then Allison moved back. She moved to Baltimore just shortly after that.
Right. And they said, you know, they were in a pretty nice little neighborhood there. And they had met some, you know, some nice friends. And everything was going well.
Yeah.
They'd been married about 6 months, I guess, at this point, somewhere near.
When they got settled into Baltimore. The main part of our story, Dale, takes place on May the 16th of 2006.
Right.
And at the time, Ray was 32 years old, and he was living with Allison there in Baltimore. Now, on this particular day, Allison was going to go out of town. She had a business trip that she was going to have to go out of town for, and I think it was like a 3-hour drive that she was going to have to do.
Do we know what she did? I've never seen that.
I've never seen what she did. But she was going to have to go out of town, and Ray was working from home because at the time he was he had worked for Stansbury and Associates, but I think he had quit shortly before this, and he was working for the main company, Agora Publishing, and he was doing videos and video promotions for the main
freelance work.
Yeah, it was like contract work, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he wasn't.
So he wasn't a straight employee, so he was working from home. He could do whatever he needed to be doing. Yeah,
he would do videos and edit videos and promotional videos for the main company. I think that's what he was doing at the time.
We'll go with that.
Yep. But now on this particular day, May 16th, 2006, Allison was going out of town. And about 6:30 p.m. that evening, one of Allison's business colleagues was staying at the house. She was a house guest. Her name was Claudia. And she had noticed that Ray had received a phone call that evening and left the house in quite a hurry. Said she was in like another part of the house or another room adjacent to his office where it was.
Yeah.
And she could hear like the
The phone ringing and him pick it up. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And I think he said something like, oh, shit.
Yep. That's what explicit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cancel that out. But yeah, that's what he said.
Yeah.
According to her anyway.
That's right. And he left the house, but he came back just a minute or two later, like he forgot something, came in and left quickly again.
According to her.
According to her.
Okay.
And that's pretty much, she was the last one to see Ray alive.
Right.
That's been documented anyway. Now, I guess that evening, Allison had tried to call Ray, and she couldn't get a hold of him.
Yeah, several times.
Yes. And it's just not like him to...
Not answer his phone.
Not answer his phone at all. And I've never heard if his phone was off or it just kept ringing. And
me neither.
I never heard that, so... You know, if it was off, it just goes, I guess it goes straight to voicemail.
Right.
But this was 2006, so he would have an older phone, like a brick-type phone. And that phone is going to come into play just a little bit later, too.
Right. So I'm sure she tried to call the house, too, but whatever. But, you know, I don't know.
Yeah. Now, the next morning, this was about 5:30 a.m., Claudia had called Allison and told her that Ray still hadn't come home.
Right. Yeah, I think Allison had called a couple times and even talked to Claudia. She's like, no. She had said, you know, earlier in the night, she had called and asked what's going on. And said, well, I don't know. He had got a phone call and he had left. I don't know if he's back or not. So she went to go check, come back and said, no, he's definitely not here. But, you know, there's a soda here on the counter and some chips and some stuff. It's kind of weird. Like, and she did, you know, also said about him leaving in a big hurry. So she said, but I don't know where he's at. So then the next morning, 5:30, she called and let him know that he still hadn't arrived home.
Yeah. About 1 or 2 o'clock that afternoon, Ray's brother, his name was Angel, I guess the same as his dad's, he got on a flight to Baltimore.
Right. Well, Allison, as soon as he told her at 5:30 that morning that he wasn't home, she knew something was wrong. She left her hotel and took off home.
Yeah.
That's when she called Ray's family and let them know. And then Angel jumped on a plane that afternoon and flew straight to Baltimore from Florida.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's when Allison goes home and that's when she finds out that Ray's car is not there.
Right.
And that's when she said she finds the, like you said, the soda can, bag of potato chips on the counter.
Right. And his Invisaligns.
Yep. Yeah. And it was on the kitchen table.
So, like, it looks like he was just took him out, was having a snack, and when the phone rang, and he's like, oh, shit, and ran out the door like he had forgotten he had a meeting or something. It's just kind of that kind of what it comes across to me. I'm just speculating here.
Yeah. Which it could happen to anybody. You know, you get a call and say, oh, I got to go.
Yeah. I thought she was going to meet me at some. I said, oh, shit, you know, because I've done that before.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I've all shitted all over.
But man, Allison notices that the lights in the bedroom and the office were still on.
Mm-hmm.
But about 7 p.m. that night, Ray's brother Angel gets to the Rivera home, and all the other family members are there, too. So I guess they're setting up a...
Everybody but Claudia, and she went back to New York.
Yeah. That's weird.
It is to me.
And that's all we know about Claudia.
Yeah, she didn't come back up at all.
Nothing.
And it kind of... That bugs me a little bit.
Yeah. She was just a house guest or a former colleague of Allison's. That's right. What I've been... told and read. So
it's kind of weird to me why she'd be there in the first place if she was going on a business trip that weekend.
Yeah.
It's never been explained.
No. Don't know.
Okay.
But on May the 18th, this was 2 days after Ray disappeared, Allison's parents, they get to the home, and their living room turns into a work area.
Yeah.
It's like a mission to find Ray.
They cleaned out everything, big table with all these maps and papers and all kind of stuff. They were dead on it.
And they're going through the house trying to find anything.
Any clue, yeah.
That what would cause Ray to disappear.
Right.
And Allison's calling the hospitals looking for, you know, maybe they have a John Doe there. They even call Ray's friend, Porter Stansberry.
Yep.
And
he immediately put up $1,000 reward for any information.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this is when the media gets involved and the family... they start searching restaurants, putting up flyers,
mm-hmm.
and little restaurants and cafes that, you know, Ray would frequently go to, and nothing. They don't have anything, Dale.
No, it's just poof.
Yep.
No, none of his credit cards have been used. His cell phone was dead. No activity on any bank accounts. It was just crazy.
Yeah.
It was just like he got a phone call and that was it.
Mm-hmm. He's gone.
Gone.
Jumping 6 days. This was on May the 22nd.
Mm-hmm.
Allison's parents, they go looking for Ray's car, and Dale, they find it in a parking lot.
Yeah, which is pretty smart. I don't know. They had probably had to look before, but I guess that's just like, well, hell, it's just right around town. We ain't finding anything. So
what have you got to lose?
Right. So let's just ride around town and see, at least we can find a car dumped somewhere or something.
Yeah.
Right.
See what we can find.
And they did, which is crazy.
They found his car in a parking lot. It was on St. Paul Street in a parking lot. And it was spot number 7.
Yeah.
And they found a ticket on the car. And this was according to the parking attendant there in that lot. He said that the car must have been parked there the day Ray disappeared.
Right. But he said it would be like late that night because when he got there the next morning, it was parked there. And that's when he put the ticket on the windshield.
Yeah. And the area where the car was found was near the Belvedere Hotel.
Right. It's also kind of near where the company he works for.
Yeah, Stansberry and Associates.
Right. But it's also near a bunch of restaurants, bars, and lounges. So it's, you know, it's, I guess, a pretty busy little part of town. So it's not really unusual that it would be there. But then again, it kind of is because he works from home.
Mm-hmm.
So depending on how you look at it. Now, it could have been somebody from work saying you need to come in. You're missing a meeting you're supposed to be in or something. Yeah. So that could have, you know.
It could make, it made sense.
Like, yeah.
But this Belvedere Hotel, Dale, it's a historic hotel. And anybody that's anybody that's been to Baltimore has stayed at that hotel.
Right.
Presidents, dignitaries, whatever. It's massive and it's luxurious.
Yeah.
But I think today it's been turned into apartments and condominiums.
Condominiums. And I think it's got restaurants and a lot of stuff because it's huge.
I think there's a nightclub in it too, right?
Probably, yeah.
Yep. I think it's a nightclub called the 13th Floor.
I don't know.
I think that's what it's called, nightclub.
I wonder if it's on the 13th floor. Or do they have a 13th floor? A lot of buildings don't.
But yeah, that would be cool for have a little club or a bar called the 13th floor.
Right.
Yeah, that would be cool.
Let's open one.
Now, 8 days after Ray disappeared, this is on May the 24th, three of Ray's coworkers go to the parking garage next to the Belvedere Hotel, and Dale, they see flip-flops on the lower roof area of the hotel.
Right. They had heard, you know, about his car being found, and for some reason, they decided to go up on top of this parking deck. Now, the car wasn't found in that parking deck, was it?
No.
All right. So they decided to go. And I heard one thing say that they were just going to get a higher look, you know, around just to see if they could find anything.
I get that.
But that's kind of weird that, okay, let's just go walk up on top of the parking deck and look. But I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
It kind of hit me as odd.
But when they're up on this parking deck and looking at the lower roof area, there's a hole.
Right.
In that lower part of the building down next to the, it's like an annex of the Belvedere Hotel.
There. Right. And if you're thinking about in visual points, you get the parking garage, and then straight across from it is this lower building, and right on the other side of it is the actual Belvedere.
Yeah.
So they're kind of all in a line there.
Now, Dale, they see flip-flops on the lower roof area of the hotel near a hole.
Yeah, there's a
nice hole in the roof.
A hole in the actual roof, right.
Yes. And this is when they call the police.
Yeah, which is kind of odd to me.
But this building they're looking at, they see the hole is an old racquetball club. And it was also known as the old church space.
Yeah.
So I guess it's been several things over the years.
Yeah, and I don't even know if it was in use at this point, was it?
No.
Because, you know, everything had switched over to condos and stuff. But it's kind of odd. I mean, even if you saw flip-flops and a hole in the roof, would you call the cops?
I don't know.
This is strange. This whole case is strange. So yeah. I'm sorry. I'm asking you 1,000 questions because I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's strange. I mean, and that's why we're doing it, because there's no conclusion to it. So that's why we're doing it.
Right.
The concierge, they open the door to the area, and they immediately smell decomp.
Stench.
Yes.
Yeah.
Dead body. And according to the concierge, there was blood coming down the wall, and Ray's legs were towards the door.
Right.
Yeah.
So, right up in there under the hole.
Yeah.
And that hole wasn't very big.
No. You can see pictures of this hole online, and we'll post pictures of it too.
Right.
So it's crazy that he would have
possibly,
yeah, created that hole.
Yeah. So right now, the way it looks is he fell through this hole and then into the side of this building, or inside of this building.
Yep.
This is what we're looking at.
And he would have had to have fall from a great distance.
Yeah, because he said it was a metal roof.
Yeah.
He would have to tear through. So it had to been pretty high rate of speed.
Yes.
Yeah.
To go through to create that hole.
Right.
The same day on May the 24th, this is when Allison and Ray's brother Angel, they go to the Baltimore Police Department, and this is where they confirmed the body of Ray and where it was found. So that's got to be tough, man.
Yeah. Tight as family as they are.
Yep.
You know, you're hoping to find him, but not like that.
So I guess the police are working on this case, and Allison and their family is just doing everything they can to find out what happened to Ray.
Right.
And they're doing their own investigation.
Yeah, I've seen a thing where Angel said, you know, well, you know, we got the news and we kind of all hugged up and cried a bit. And then we went back to their house and sat around for a while and just trying to let it sink in. And then you start going, wait, what happened here? You know, it's bad enough you think about he's gone, something has happened to him. But then you have no answer as to what really happened. And that's probably pretty haunting itself.
And another thing they found on that roof, Dale, was his cell phone and his glasses.
Right. They're still on the roof, right?
They were still on the roof.
Right.
I guess it'd been hard to see that from a distance.
Yeah.
You know, from looking down from the parking deck.
Yeah.
But when they found the phone, there wasn't a scratch on it.
Right. So, well, it said a little bit of scratch, but the thing wasn't busted. The screen was good.
And it still
come on and work. Yeah.
Yeah.
And glasses didn't have a scratch on them.
The glasses had no scratch. That's what's crazy.
Yeah.
To fall on a metal roof and not have a scratch or a lens.
This ain't blue blockers. This is like,
these were prescription glasses.
Yeah, glasses, right.
So, I mean, you'd think falling from a distance, it'd knock the lens out or something.
Right. Now, one of the flip-flops, the strap on the side, like not the toe strap, but one of the side straps was out. The other one's fine, right?
Yeah, it had a few little scuff marks on it.
Scuff marks on the toe, I think, of the left one.
Yeah, I think so.
I think so. Like where he had drug his toe or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this is, we're talking about thong flip-flops, you know, between the toe gimmicks.
Yeah, them are that I don't wear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't wear thongs.
No. I don't like them between my butt cheeks or my toes. So. Now, just going back to where Ray's body was found, his body was found in a prone position, and it was heavily decomposed.
Yeah. Well, 6 days worth anyway.
Yeah, 6 days. Now, Dale, when his body was found, this was 8 days had passed from his disappearance. And despite all the decomposition, The medical examiner discovered multiple fractured ribs.
Yeah, it was like 24, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, something crazy.
Punctured lungs, lacerations.
And those lacerations were huge.
Yeah, they were just ripped. The skin was just ripped. And damage to his skull and two fractures to the right leg.
Right in the shin bone, I think.
Yep. With the extent of the injuries, it appeared that it'd come from a great height when he went through the roof.
Right, if he went through the roof.
Yeah. And investigators noticed that the hole was clean and not too large like we talked about.
Right, like he'd almost have to come through it standing up.
Yeah, just
vertical.
Yeah.
Now, some reports said that both legs were broken, but some don't. So I don't know. We'll just go with the one, I guess.
Yeah.
In two places. But I don't know.
Yeah.
Depends on where you get your info.
But the biggest question came, where did he come from and how did he get through that little hole? That's what's crazy.
Yeah.
Now, where they found his body, Dale, in the hole that was in that roof, there was a lot of theories on where he could have come from to make that big hole.
Yeah, it's I don't know. It's crazy.
Now, if he would have jumped from the top of the building, the roof, he would have had to have...
He'd have to have been running at a great, great speed.
Yeah, because it was 40 feet from the edge of the roof outward.
To the hole.
Yes.
And the way the Belvedere is, if you're looking at it from the front, the center of the building sets a good ways back from the two outer concourses, I guess you'd say.
Yeah.
So it's like, I don't know how to explain it where you understand what I'm saying. Like one, if you're looking at it head on, the left side comes out and then it's squared off. It goes back into where the entrance is.
It's almost like a U-shaped.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And then so the center of the building is set a good bit farther back than the two sides. Yeah, U-shaped. There you go.
But this racquetball club, that the roof that he fell through.
Is in the U.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the hole was 40 feet from the edge of the roof.
From the front of the building.
Where he would have had to have jumped from to at least have made that hole.
Right.
And he was wearing flip-flops at the time.
And it was almost dead center between those two air ducts, or those whatever it looked like, windows or air ducts, what it was. It was almost dead center. So it was really strange. It blew my mind when I saw the photos.
Mm-hmm.
Now, so what we're getting at is basically if he's wearing those flip-flops, he'd have to run like hell in flip-flops to make that jump, and it's almost not possible.
Now, Ray was, he was 6'5", Dale.
He's a big dude.
And about 250 pounds.
Yeah.
And he was athletic. He was in shape.
He's water polo.
Yeah, he played him and Porter Stansberry played water polo in school.
Yeah.
So he had to be pretty fit.
Right. But still, I don't know. I saw somewhere where they said it how fast he'd have to be running, and it was like almost impossible, especially in flip-flops.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Now, you also looking at this roof, there's other places that he could have jumped from if he was going to jump.
Now, the top of the building didn't have a railing, so, I mean, you could have jumped straight off of it, but I just don't know if you could have got that much air.
Yeah.
Now, like you were saying, the two U points, I guess, is that what we're going to call it?
Yeah.
Now, it had a ledge where it's probably a little more accessible to be able to hit the hole if you had got out on the edge and walked all the way to the inside corner.
Mm-hmm.
But
those ledges were only accessible through office buildings, offices, or
private property.
Yeah, or residences
right. That
were in that hotel.
And you also knew how to get to where you're going.
Yeah, because you just couldn't just walk to a window and see the ledge. You would have to go through, you'd have to navigate through several rooms to get out there to
it. Yeah, and then a lot of those places are a locked door. So the roof access is not open to public. So everything was, it would be difficult, or you would have to know where you were going to actually get there.
Yeah.
Is what we're saying.
But those points would be more in line with that hole to be able to jump from or be pushed from that area to.
Yeah, but the windows out to the ledge only open halfway.
And
he's 6'5". If he's going out the window to be on a ledge, I don't think nobody's coming out there to push him.
Yeah.
Because it's a ledge, like you said, you know. I don't know exactly how wide it is, but just looking at pictures, it's not very.
and those ledges aren't as high as the regular roof.
Right.
It's way on down.
Yeah.
So if he would have jumped or been pushed from the ledge, I don't think he would have made that hole.
It depends on how sturdy the hole or the roof was, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know, when was this thing built? We don't know that, do we?
It's an old hotel,
so,
but we don't know that annex. We don't know how old that is,
right? So and then there's also, you know, people who said maybe he jumped from that parking garage where the co-workers were, but that would have been about a 20-foot jump, but it really was only about 20 foot down from there, and I don't think you could have survived that.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah,
you wouldn't have. If you didn't, you wouldn't have as much damage to him as he did.
Yeah.
You know.
But there were some theories, too, that he might have been hit by a car on that parking deck and plummeted from that parking deck to the hole.
Ooh, I never heard that one.
Yeah, but there was a four-foot rail around that parking deck, right. So he'd had to...
He'd have to do a triple Lindy and a gainer to go through that sucker feet first straight down. Yeah. So that's almost
it just
out.
Blows my mind.
It's about as big a chance as that as he's dropping him out of a helicopter or jumping out of an airplane or something. You know, yeah.
Just to be right near where his car was parked.
Right.
That's what's mind blowing.
So, yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, while the investigation was going on, Ray's family was doing their own investigation, and they are tearing the house apart trying to find anything, like we talked about, that would be able to find Ray.
Right.
And Dale, this is when Ray's brother finds a note taped to the back of Ray's computer.
Yeah.
And it's a piece of paper, but it's like it was in very small font.
Very. Yeah.
A lot of information on that little note, but very small font.
Yeah, and it was really weird.
Well, the note starts out, it says, brothers and sisters, right now around the world, volcanoes are erupting. What an awesome sight.
Right.
Whom virtue unites, death will not separate. Then many names were mentioned on this note, including a lot of family members, movie stars, and there was a list of movies. And Ray also wrote in the letter, he said, I stand before you a man who understands the purpose and value of our secrets. That's why I cherish them as secrets.
So it's a lot of weird stuff.
Yep. And the FBI, they examined this note, and they didn't find any suicide intent.
Right, nor did they think it was so they thought maybe it was a code, right?
Yeah, they did think it was a code.
But I don't think they found anything to confirm if it was a code or not either, because it's just so sporadic.
Yeah. And one good thing is the medical examiner determined that the cause of death is undetermined, to be able to leave this case open.
Right.
To continue investigating.
Because they were going to close it and say, you know, suicide.
Yes.
And said the medical examiner actually pulled Allison into her office and closed the door and said, I know what they're trying to do, but we're not closing this case, which is weird.
Yeah.
This is just conspiracy all over.
Oh, it is.
You know, and they said, you know, they found all that stuff on the roof, the flip-flops, the phone, the glasses. And then even the, you know, the... buyer, who was the investigator on it, he said it looked really staged to him.
Yes.
It was kind of odd. It was staged. Mm-hmm. And you know, something we didn't mention is that Ray had a money clip that he kept with him at all times, mm-hmm. that Allison had gave him, had his initials on it.
It was an antique
thing. Yeah. And he always had it with him because he carried his money, his ID, everything in it. And that's never been found.
No. And so, there's been no purchases on Ray's credit card since the day he disappeared, and no cash pulled out of any bank accounts. And his phone was also dead.
Yeah.
And there was nothing, no kind of evidence in Ray's car. Because when Allison got the car back, she, from, you know, I guess they impounded it and
right.
checked it out. When she got it back, she said she tore through it.
She's trying to find that money clip.
Yes.
Because she's like, there's no way in hell he leaves the house without that money clip.
Yeah, that was his prized possession.
Yep.
Yeah.
That and a penny that she had gave him.
Mm-hmm.
When, did they ever find a penny?
No.
She had found a penny somewhere, and it had a heart punched in it.
Yes.
And said she had given it to him, and said that anytime you need a little extra support or something, just think about me, and this will be. And it said he kept it in a little bowl on his dresser, but the penny was gone.
Yeah.
I don't think it's ever turned up.
I don't think it has.
You know, and they went around to several people at the Belvedere, and you would think somebody somewhere would have saw something. All those windows in the front, people living there and doing stuff, but nobody saw anything.
Now, there was a book written by a lady named Makita Brotman, and she claims that somewhere around that time that evening that she had heard a crash.
Hmm. Now, she lived in the building.
She did live in the building.
And she still does, I think.
Yeah. She wrote a book on this.
Yep.
And she claims that the crash she heard correlates with the time that it could have been him crashing through that roof.
Of course, that's a sealed book.
Yeah.
I hadn't read the book.
But no.
They say it's pretty good. Yeah, but I don't know. It's just...
There's so many things. And even according to Ray's wife, Ray was scared of heights.
Yeah. saying it really so bad he wouldn't even get on the ladder to put up Christmas decorations.
Yeah. And Allison went to the top of the Belvedere. She got on the roof.
Yeah.
And it freaked her out.
Yeah, her and her parents.
Yes.
Yeah. Crazy.
It blows my mind. And even like we talked about, to get to the top of the Belvedere, you most likely need to know where you were going.
Yep.
And only back stairwells led to the top and were usually locked or closed to the public.
Yep.
And the door to the roof area was normally locked.
Yep. So you couldn't just run up there and jump off the building if you wanted to.
Yep. Now, the medical examiner did determine that Ray's drug test came back negative. He was not on any drugs at the time of his death.
Right.
Said there was a minute trace of alcohol, but they said that could have been from...
the decomp.
Yeah, which is normal.
Yeah, it's weird.
Yeah.
It's just crazy.
Now, getting into some more other things.
Well, speaking of crazy, how about the camera that was on the roof? Dun, 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 guess what?
It wasn't working.
It wasn't working.
Imagine that.
All the other cameras were working. Didn't see them nowhere. Got a camera on the roof, and it was either unplugged or wasn't working or whatever. And it's how many times does that come up?
I know. Now, Allison, she Googled the first line of Ray's note, and which said, "Whom virtues unite, death will not separate." And she found a connection to Freemasonry.
Hmm.
Because prior to Ray's death, he had gotten into the Freemasons. He hadn't joined, but he was curious about
it.
And he was doing research, and I think he had talked to some Freemasons about joining. And me and you've talked off the air, and I've read stuff on this, and I don't know if there's any Freemasonry linked to any of this. I think, to me, personally, I think he was doing research for a screenplay, maybe.
That kind of makes sense, you know, because he said he went and talked to a guy about joining in Baltimore, and then the same day he disappeared, he had went out and bought Freemasonry for Dummies, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or Masons for Dummies, or whatever it was called.
Freemason.
So, yeah. That's just, like you said, it's really strange. I don't know, it's to me that, why, do you, I don't know, that is this suicide thing.
Yeah.
I don't buy it, but I can't tell you what happened.
Yeah. But now, he was a big fan of M. Night Shyamalan.
Yeah.
His movies and his...
he's got some weird movies.
Yeah. So, it's possible Ray was doing research. I don't know if he was thinking about joining. But it is kind of weird.
Yeah, he was kind of into that secret society kind of thing.
You know? Mm-hmm. Now, there's something else that the phone conversation Ray had right before he disappeared was short. And Claudia heard a surprise... like, oh shit, from Ray. And the police traced the call, Dale, and it came from Stansberry and Associates.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, you got good news and bad news on that.
Well, the call came from a switchboard.
Right.
So the police couldn't track it down.
Right.
And, well, they couldn't track down the caller's extension, let's put it that way. But Stansberry and Associates, Dale, they put a gag order on all their employees.
Depends on who you ask. If you ask them, they didn't do it.
Yep.
Yes, the employees did.
Yep. And so none of the police, none of the employees would talk to the police.
Now, I think Porter had been in trouble with the SEC or something at one point.
Yes.
And
but think, this was prior to Ray coming to work for him.
Yeah, but I think, you know, this was kind of his deal with, he didn't want to be involved.
Yeah.
Because he had already had problems with the police.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of odd to me. It was cool to him to put up $1,000 reward, but, you know, if you got money to fly into your best buddy's wedding with a private helicopter, you could probably do a little better than that, I would think.
Yeah, you'd think.
But, I mean, I guess that's here to there, but I don't know.
And it's also been reported, too, that prior to Ray's disappearance and death, that he'd gotten a little paranoid because on May the 15th, this was the day before he disappeared, Dale, the security alarm went off at their home. And Ray came out of the bedroom with a bat. And according to Allison, he was scared.
Yeah, terrified.
Yep. But the police came out and they looked like, well, they thought it might have been a burglar, but they wasn't sure. But they just determined that it was a squirrel that set off the alarm.
Yeah, said that happened twice. And she said that even you could see it looked like somebody had tampered with the window. So she ain't buying the squirrel ankle. But, you know, I think there was talk that he had went back to California prior to this for just a little bit. And when he came back, that's when he started being all weird and paranoid about stuff, even as much as didn't want her to go anywhere without him. Mm-hmm. Even when she wanted to go to the track to walk or jog or whatever, he would go with her. And one time he went, and it was raining, so he just kind of stayed in the car while she was doing that, and then saw some guy was talking to her, and he freaked out, went up on her. And so he was kind of paranoid a little bit there for some reason.
Yep.
And then, you know, think somebody's breaking into your house, so that's going to fuel that. But
the alarm did go off. I mean, there's proof that the alarm did go off.
Oh, yeah.
But I don't know if Ray was having some psychological stuff going on from that, or thinking that somebody was after him.
Yeah.
I mean, he could have some mental issues going on.
And somebody might have been after him. He went to California and come back, and whoever he was, maybe, I don't know. Maybe he found out something he wasn't supposed to know while he's doing all this research.
Mm-hmm. But Allison, Ray's wife, believed someone was trying to get in their house. But the police, they had three theories when they were investigating Ray's death. And the first was that he was pushed or fell off the top of the roof of the Belvedere and went through the lower roof 10, 11 stories down.
I don't believe that.
And how? But the distance from the Belvedere to the hole, like we said, was 45 feet. And almost virtually impossible to make. You know?
That's a long way.
And the second theory was Ray fell from an adjacent parking garage, like we talked about. And this was discounted because the top of the garage roof was only 20 feet high and 20 feet away from the hole. And he wouldn't have suffered those extensive injuries.
Right.
If he'd have, and he, it's very possible to live from that.
Yeah.
Very, very possible.
Yeah.
And like we said, the third... the police contemplated that the idea of Ray falling off the 11th floor ledge that, like we talked about, wrapped around the Belvedere.
Right.
But those ledges are just too hard to get to.
But that'd be the only believable point. If he indeed come off that building or the surrounding buildings, that would be, to me, the only believable point where he could have made the distance to hit the hole.
Yep.
Or to make the hole, I guess I should say.
It's just crazy, man. But this... story was featured on the reboot of Unsolved Mysteries on Netflix, the very first episode. So if you get a chance, go check that out. It's a very good story. It's got an interview with Allison, his brother, some of the people from the hotel,
pictures of the hole,
the the detective that worked this case for many years, and
they kind of booted him off the case.
They did. He got absorbed with it, but he seemed really, really good.
Yeah.
Like he was really wanting to solve this case. But there's so much theory and speculation on this. You can read about it online. One of Ray's favorite movie was called The Game. And this was about a man who jumped from a roof and thought he could live. There was like an air mattress or something below the roof. And he could,
I forget the whole story. It was, I think, Michael Douglas. Was that who was in it?
And Sean Penn.
And, this guy was super rich, and his younger brother had bought him some kind of game or had lined up something for him. I hadn't seen the movie, so I don't know. I'm just running my mouth. But anyway, at the end of it, the guy is going to jump off the building, and he jumps off, but he goes through a glass, you know, like a big win, and then there's like an airbag under it. So it was like the whole movie was a game. He just didn't know. So it was one of his favorite movies, and he even mentioned it in that letter, in the little note, you know, along with Christopher Reeve and what was the guy who done Eyes Wide Shut? Because that was another movie he was into. Kubrick?
Yeah, Stanley Kubrick.
Yeah. Mentioned him by name, too, in that letter as well. So it's just really a really weird thing.
But in the Unsolved Mysteries episode, they pointed the finger to Porter Stansberry pretty heavy, I think.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah.
And you know, it could
and he failed to be a part of it. He didn't want any part of it.
Yeah.
But he did do an interview after it was over with, and he sort of made some claims too that he didn't put a gag order on anyone. He just pretty much told employees if, you know, they had something to say that they had to go through their communications director at the office.
Right.
They would make all the statements instead of individual employees.
Yeah, that trouble he got in with SEC is where he had filed some fraud. They filed fraud charges against Porter and fined him $1.5 million.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, if you get in that kind of, I don't blame him for, you know, kind of watching what you say and what goes on if they already got you once.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, that will have really nothing to do with this, but I just want to bring that up.
But it's a pretty interesting case, and it's not solved. No. It's still under investigation, but we'll post pictures and on our social media and tell us what y'all think.
Yeah, because I am really interested, because it just blows my mind.
Mm-hmm.
Usually have some sort of angle I get in my head when we do these cases that, well, this is what I think happened.
One way or another.
Yeah, and this one, I ain't got a damn clue.
No, this where he landed, that just blows my mind.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if he'd have, we talked about the helicopter, Porter's helicopter.
Right.
If he'd been pushed out of a helicopter, you know, but they did talk to the FCC in Baltimore, and during that window of time, there were no helicopters reported in the area at that time,
right,
through the air traffic control. So that wouldn't have been possible. That just, it just blows my mind. Where did he come from?
Right. The only thing, you know, maybe the hole was already there. Do we know that? If the hole was already there and they put it in the hole?
I mean,
it doesn't look like it. I mean, I hadn't seen anything where it said they found, you know, it kind of sounds morbid, pieces of him, you know, in the metal coming through. But, I mean, I guess they've checked all that.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a lot smaller hole than I thought, so he definitely had to come through like a missile if he did.
Yeah, head first or feet first. Or
feet first to break his legs. But, you know, that was one of the medical examiner couldn't get over that part. She said basically the way his shins were broken, that it just didn't line up. None of that made sense to her.
No.
It wouldn't be broken that way if that indeed was what happened. Right. So it make you think that somebody done that stuff to him beforehand. And if that was the case, then there ain't no way he's running off the building.
Nope. All right, Dale, that is the death of Ray Rivera.
Right.
The mysterious death of Ray Rivera.
And it's still a mystery, because we have no damn idea.
That's it.
Oh, yeah. He had to have been running over 11 miles an hour to make that leap from the top of that hotel in flip-flops.
Ain't no way. There's no way.
No. Crazy.
All right, Dale, that is the case of Ray Rivera.
All right, guys, well, I hope you enjoyed that one. It was we went put together one fairly quick to get one in, get back on track, and this one's the one we really both dig and still don't know what the hell happened. So no. Maybe you guys can help us out.
Yeah, if anybody knows anything, just let us know.
Yeah.
Or call your local law.
If you don't know nothing, what do you think? What is your
What's your thoughts?
Yeah, that.
All right. All right, Dale, we're going to get out of here.
All right, man, good. It's been a while, and I'm glad to be back in the crack house doing this, and this is what I love, and love all you guys, and we'll catch you on the next round.
All right. We want everyone to be safe, be careful, and always be aware of your surroundings.
Because the next episode could be about you.
This is the Crack House Chronicles.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.